Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
So it's been a few years now, but when I was in college, I learned a pretty powerful lesson about the way that funds work, about the way money management happens. I was working a couple of jobs. I was doing some daycare stuff in the mornings, and then in the early afternoon or so, I would make my way from the Middletown area down to D.C., and I would work about 8 to 10 hours or so on the water, doing kayaking camps and leading a water sports program for elementary through middle and high school age kids. And so then once we were done like baking in the sun and everything else, all I wanted to do was get some food and go home. And so this was in the heart of DC where they had this one pizza shop that had slices that were about as big as your face, right? So they were good sized slices, but they were also at DC prices, which meant that like they were a little bit more than you would expect. But when I was swiping my card, you don't really think about how quickly that goes when you buy two pieces at a time. And so at the time, I was saving up because I had my eye on a new mountain bike, because that's what I was doing with all of the free time that I had working those two jobs, was I would then go out and I would mountain bike when I could. Until one day, my plans kind of came to a halt. I had paid some bills just a few days before, or the day before, and then I go to the pizza shop. They knew I was that frequent that I had they knew that when the canoe trailer pulled up, not too many canoe trailers come in Northwest DC, and so I'd pull up, and they would just have my pizza ready. It was like magic. It was like the Chipotle app before the Chipotle app existed, where you feel like you're stealing it, right? Have you ever done that? Anyway. And so I go and I swiped my card, and they go, "Oh man, it doesn't work." I was like, what do you mean it doesn't work? It doesn't work. Apparently I paid the bills and I had like barely any money left in the bank account. And so my like $10 worth of two slices of pizza or whatever it was, it just pulled in. I was like, I don't understand. Luckily, that was like the one day that I had cash, and I was like, I have this much. And they're like, "We can give you one slice." And I never went back there after that day, right? Because I was just like, oh man. But what I realized that day is that I couldn't save for my bike that I wanted and have my pizza too, right? There's something about that like I had this thing that I had my eyes on, and it was gonna be great and perfect, and eventually got it, and it's been fantastic. But like there was this reality that the quick fix of the pizza, that like, you know, that momentary thing, if I just thought ahead a little bit, I could pack a lunch or do something else. But that nice instant gratification of even them knowing what I wanted and it being ready for me when I pulled up, that was pretty sweet. But I don't think that kind of sweet life that Jesus calls us to can be found at a drive-thru, or that lasting contentment can never be found at the end of the pizza line, where we sometimes feel like it is. And so as we start to enter into this conversation during Lent, that's kind of the mentality. That's this understanding of the sweet life, is that we want to find a place of lasting contentment. And yet so many times what we do, kind of like our altar that's kind of a mess right now with our tool, is that we cover up those things that matter most because of those things that are those instant gratification pieces, because of those things that will give us that kind of little bit of a sugar rush like we'll have at the extravaganza, right? We'll get the kids all sugared up, and we'll send them home, and hopefully they'll crash before they get home if we plan it right. Right, Courtney? You know, if we kind of sparse that or kind of parcel it out. But in this time of Lent, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be kind of journeying through the Gospel of John. And so Heidi read for us the first chapter, or a portion of the first chapter, the calling of the first disciples that Jesus has in the Gospel of John. And so as we walk through there, what we're going to see is that Jesus invites us into this sweet life, invites us into something more that has lasting contentment. And so as we do that, we see that there is this beautiful question that Jesus asks. And in the translation that Heidi read for us today, it said, "What are you looking for?" is what Jesus asks. That's a little bit too deep, right? But I think that "what do you want" feels a little bit better. Now, we can tell what that little pug wants, right? Our dog the other day, last night actually, we had some vegetables, and Bethy, our 5-year-old, only ate like the very top, like the top row of her broccoli off. So it was still stalk, but just didn't have any leaves, if you know what I'm talking about, right? It was super weird. Anyway, usually she just pounds them, it's great, but one fell on the floor, and our dog races over thinking it's going to be something delicious and puts it in his mouth, and right as his tongue touched it, he goes like this and just looks at me like I'm the problem. And I go, "Yo, man, you gotta, nope." But he thought that there was gonna be something there. But the idea of you know, this question that Jesus has of "what do you want?" That kind of hits home, right? Especially if it's Jesus. Especially if you've been hearing this guy named John the Baptist, kind of a little bit weird, but he's this prophetic voice saying there's this one who is greater than me that's going to come, and there is a guy, just listen, prepare the way of the Lord. And then you know that he's pointing to this guy, Jesus, this rabbi, this teacher, and now Jesus turns around and he says, "What do you want?" That's a pretty heavy question, isn't it? Did you write down some of those questions? Answers for that? What did you write? This is a tough one. This is a tougher next step question than we've had in a long time. What did you write on your next step sheet about "what do you want"? Smoothness in the day-to-day. Normalcy, right? Yeah. Where it's not like this? Okay, nice. You want it all. Saunders not pulling any punches, man. If Jesus asks me, it's like a genie saying, "You've got one chance. What's it going to be?" Nice. All right. All the things. What? Knowledge and understanding? Nice. So you're in the company of like Solomon, right? Where God says, "I give you one thing." And it wasn't riches or anything else. He was like, "I just want to be wise. I want to be the wisest dude ever." Yeah, nice. Balance, yeah. Any other thoughts? Assurance? Peace? Yeah. Those are good, right? Those are good. And so what we find is that Jesus' question really gets to this idea that no matter where we are in our life stage, the way that we answer that question, Jesus still has something for every single one of us, right? Think back a couple of years ago when I was a new parent, or maybe a new second-time parent. If Jesus asked me that, I would just be like, "Jesus, just hold this kid. I want to go take a nap," right? And there is some time where just rest is what our souls need. It's where our weariness needs that. Or it's the ebb and the flow. And God, we just need not even a win, just some space to breathe and expectation. Like that's where we are. And so Jesus' question asks so much of who we are. And I think that when we look at that, when we look at where the disciples were, where we are right now, we realize that Jesus meets us where we are, and no matter what, has something in store for us. And so today, for the rest of our time, we're going to be using this framework that Richard Rohr kind of builds upon, but it's by, the idea was introduced of these two halves of life by a psychologist named Carl Jung. And what Jung understood was that in the first part of our lives, that we are building our identity. It is this time where our ego or our understanding is being formulated. What we would say is this is the time where we are building the understanding of who we are and whose we are. And so Rohr kind of builds on that by saying, you know, this is the time and space where we build our own career and where we have this idea that whatever comes next, this foundation that we are laying is going to be the thing that everything else rests upon. It's a pretty big time. It's a pretty important time in our lives. And so sometimes what happens is that we get so anxious and we get so ready for the next thing, though, that we want to get out of the foundation and start building up. And we say things, and I know that this is something that is true, and it's been true in my life, and probably is true for those looking at their first career or just getting into the workforce, where you apply for a job and they say, "Ah, we wish you had more experience." or we need somebody with experience, and you say, I've been in school for 7 years, right? How could I have, unless I started my experience when I was in middle school, how could I possibly have this job? That's what I'm trying to get, right? It's that, that's almost that transition point, but it's that time where we start making our own way. And so if you then ask Jesus, if Jesus says, hey, what do you want? And we're in this place. Sometimes it's just, I want somewhere where there is sustainability. I want that next piece, that next thing, that next, you know, whatever. And oftentimes it's the prayer for this stage, and not you know, positive or negative. It just is, you know, I want to be blessed. And so I think that for us, and if you find yourself in this stage, maybe the prayer is that we might have hands to do the work of the place that we are called right now, and the posture to receive that blessing. So many times in Scripture, what we find is people want to kind of skip the line a little bit, right? And instead of making a foundation, we would like to have that office on the top floor overlooking the skyline. We don't want to go through that really hard work of a foundation. That's what we find with David, who was a man after God's own heart, is that David goes from this posture of doing the hard work and doing the things that he's called to do and being receptive to that gift, to then at one point, there was this lady, right? Do we all know the lady? There was this lady that he saw, kind of creepery, on a rooftop, and he was like, hey, she's married to some other dude, but she'll be mine. Her name was Bathsheba, right? And he was supposed to be doing other things. He was supposed to be with his people, with his troops, out on the battlefield. And so all of a sudden, this posture of, God, I want to receive your blessing, goes into palms then turned downward, trying to grasp what is not his. And what happens is that creates a fall, because the foundation starts to crack then a little bit. So stage one, or that first half of life then, becomes doing the hard work that God has called us to, but then also receiving that gift and blessing when it comes our way. And then the idea is that these two halves are separated by something of crisis. And so when crisis happens, Rohr talks about it in a way of crisis isn't a bad thing, because what happens is that crisis then allows us to pause and take a step back and reflect on what that is. Sometimes it's loss of a job, sometimes it's a death in the family, or some kind of life-shaping event. And so, you know, what happens sometimes is that we get so fearful of that failure that we never then encounter this true crisis, because we just kind of withdraw and say, well, I don't want anything bad to happen. But in reality, those are the catalysts that then allow us to see God more fully. And so these crises then come to this crucial part, and what we find is two things Rohr reminds us. Number one is that we might feel like God has abandoned us, but that's not the case. That no matter how far or distant God feels, God is always right there if we are willing to cry out. If we're willing to cry out to Jesus, if we're willing to find those times and places where even in the depths of our very bones when we are crying out in agony, we are still crying out in faith and going, God, I know that there is something here that is positive, but I can't see you right now. That is a positive and powerful act of faith that we have. And then secondly, what we find is that as we move into those critical pieces, that God has not abandoned us. And then secondly, is that we realize that the worst thing is never the last thing. And so we find that God will help us crawl out of that. And so sometimes the idea of working through this crisis that allows us to healthily, is that a word? It's going to be a word today. Is that it allows us then to move in positive ways out of that hurt, out of that brokenness, out of that crisis, into seeing God in a new light. And so this prayer, if you find yourself in crisis, and sometimes, you know, crisis isn't over in just an instant, because if we have spent, you know, years and years and years kind of messing up our marriage and relationship, then it's going to take a while to heal from that, right? If we've done things in our workplace where we know that it's just going to, you know, we've just been waiting for that time for the hammer to drop, it's probably going to take a while for that trust to be built back up. And so it's not an instant thing. And so what we have to come to realize, though, it's kind of one of those, it's the first step of any 12-step. It's the first step or the first principle of our Celebrate Recovery groups. It's saying that I'm not in control, that I am not in control, and that I am powerless to change these habits, hang-ups, and things that break down that trust in my life. But I think that it's important to say, I'm powerless against these things. I'm powerless to change the things I cannot change. However, that doesn't mean that I'm hopeless. And so we can then continue to go on and look to God and look to people in our community. And so what we say in this prayer, if you're in this season, is that, God, may I have eyes to see that I am not in control. That's a hard prayer to pray, right? That I'm not in control, but God, you are big enough. Which then leads us to this second half. The second half where we see the disciples really answering beautifully. And that doesn't always happen throughout Scripture. Sometimes the disciples seem like, man, clearly they are just like not getting it how many times Jesus, but this time it feels like they have it, because if we look at our Scripture and the way that we see is that when we come through that crisis, we see God more fully and hear what God is saying and doing in our lives. And so what was the response when Jesus says, what do you want, or what are you looking for? What was the response? The response wasn't, I want something. It was, where are you staying? Isn't that a little bit jarring? Doesn't that kind of put a 180 on things? Is that Jesus says, what do you want? And they say, well, where are you staying? I don't know that that's what I was asking, actually, right? But Jesus says, oh, well, why don't you come with me? So then it says, you know, 39, it says, Jesus replied, come and see. And so they went and they saw where he was staying and they remained with him that day. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Isn't that kind of cool? And so some of this second half of life thinking is to recognize what is most important. Those crises oftentimes bring us into what mortality looks like and remind us that we are but vessels. And so when we think about the ways that this Lenten season and the ashes on our forehead on Wednesday remind us of our mortality, we say, yeah, I'm only here long enough to plant the seeds that hopefully will be a lasting legacy for me. And so that foundation that I've laid, if that crisis thing kind of puts a cap on that foundation, or sometimes what it does is the crisis says, you know that ladder that you've been climbing? You've leaned it against the wrong building. You've been investing in the wrong thing. And so that crisis reorients us to what matters most. So then in the second half of life, we have ears to hear what Jesus would have to say. And oftentimes it's relationship. Oftentimes it's other people. Oftentimes it's the things that matter most. And so with that, we see that the disciples say, well, where are you staying? And Jesus looks at him. And then the other thing is that that two of the disciples heard what John had said. So John the Baptist and followed Jesus, and Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, then went. And the first thing that he did was he got his brother and said, come on, there's something happening here. We want to bring others in, because now that foundation that we laid on the first half of life, we want to make sure that it is solid enough to hold those things that we are pouring into it or that we are building on top of. And so what the disciples are building are something that's eternal. It's something that matters most. It's something that then cannot be taken away from those things. So the prayer for the second half of life is to have ears to hear and be content in what God is offering us. And so our so what question today then becomes, no matter where you find yourself in this journey, in this season, maybe you've been down this journey again, maybe you feel like you've hit a crisis or something else, Jesus has something to offer in that question of what do you want that is powerful and life-giving. But it's this invitation to be a disciple in this season that really makes it powerful. A disciple who is somebody that is following Christ with their head, who is being changed by Christ in their heart, and who then is carrying out that mission of Jesus with their hands, doing all of those things, maybe not perfectly, maybe you're just checking this thing out, and that's okay, and that is great, because there is a community that will journey with you. There is a community that will surround you, because one of the things that theologian N.T. Wright says in reflecting on these verses in John, he says, when you go looking for Jesus and discover that he's looking for you, you'll remember that day forever. When we think that God is so distant, and yet we turn our back to say, maybe God is in this direction. We realize that he's been there the whole time, that the one that created us and shaped us was there the whole time. There is a power and a joy in knowing that we are not forgotten. And so will you take that next step into that sweet life of lasting contentment this Lent? Let's stand together and pray our closing prayer.